Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and oh, my goodness, Mary, we have done it again. It is another great show. I am telling you right now, the book is called Ignition, right? Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections. Sounds deep, doesn't it? But I got to tell you what, my guest, Matthew Mosley, oh, my gosh, Sally, I am telling you right now, he is outstanding. The book is brilliant. Listen, I'm just going to tell you right now, we've done a lot of shows on communication and some shows on marketing, and folks, forget everything that you read, just buy this book. I am being as serious as I can possibly be. This is the quintessential book on marketing, communication, and getting your message. And I want to tell you something else that this book does. It explains everything in terms of how stuff comes at us and the messages that we get. What? Oh, yeah. Well, Matthew's going to explain all that. But listen, I'm just telling you, the book is outstanding. But before we get to him and the book, let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life. Look, we are four-part people. We are physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual people, right? And we've had so many special operations forces people on here. We've even had a major general who was in the Iraq war right here on this show talking to us about leadership and saying you've got to constantly be in training physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, because if you're not, and Matt says this in the book, here's what's so great. He says, because if you're not growing, you're dying. We keep saying that, right? So you've got to be in constant training physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So how do we go about doing that? So let's talk about, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being miserable, 10 being outstanding in your training, right? In the last week, right? 5 being average. Let's talk about your physical training. So in terms of getting enough exercise, eating right, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, how would you rate yourself out there on a scale of 1 to 10? Right? Now, whatever your number is, that's your number. Okay, we're not here to judge the number. That's your starting point, and that's where we go, okay, how do I get better? All right, so there's your first number. All right, second number is the mental number. Folks, my wife says it all the time, don't be a mental loafer. Get active about your mental growth. That means knowledge about what you do, being consuming on your own, being active. I don't know, read a book like this book. This is a great book to help increase your knowledge, right, and understanding. Right? And learning, Ignition, I'm telling you, right? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say your mental growth is going? All right? Now you have two numbers. A third number is the emotional number. Listen, even Matthew is going to talk about this on the show. But the fact of the matter is, we've talked about emotional quotients and emotional intelligence and Daniel Kahneman and Goleman, and we've talked about all of them in terms of, you know, listen, emotional intelligence is everything, and it's really, truly everything when it comes to carving out a message, right? I know you want to think that you're a logical being. Wrong. You are not. You're an emotional being. You will make your decisions based on emotion. But there's two scales we want to look at here. One is, how well are you doing when it comes to controlling your emotions under stress and pressure? And then the second is, how well are you able to tap into and truly understand the emotions of others? Which, by the way, is going to require you to listen. And on a scale of 1 to 10, putting those together, how would you say you're doing? All right, now you got three numbers. Finally, the fourth number, spiritual number. Folks, here's the deal. You say, well, I'm not really a spiritual guy. I don't really, or gal. You know, I don't have that spiritual morning. We're all spiritual. At the end of the day, when we move the physical, the mental, and the emotional, right, we all run to something that influences the spirit of who we are. something that gives us a sense of peace, something that gives us a sense of centeredness, whether that's God or nature or whatever, or, you know, meditation or yoga, right? Something centers us and we go this, and then the question becomes, is it working? And if it's not, then what do you got to do to change it? But you got to be working on your spirit, right? Because we all have faith, right? We all believe that at one point there's going to be a time when this pandemic is over. That's faith. That's spiritual. Because it hasn't happened yet, but we do believe it, right? So on a scale of 1 to 10, what would be your spiritual number? Those four numbers are like the legs of a chair. If the legs of a chair are uneven, right, what happens to your posture over time? It's bad. What happens if the legs of the chair are too low? You can't sit at a table and eat nutritiously, right? And speaking of someone who's got his legs all at the right height, right? And he's got his legs all even. His name is Matthew L. Mosley. He is a communication strategist with decades of experience at the intersection of public policy, business, and government. He has managed many public affairs projects and campaigns for organizations and companies. He is the author of Ignition, Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections, and Dear Dr. Thompson, Felony Murder, Hunter S. Thompson, and The Last Gonzo Campaign. He has completed four first ever record adventure swims, which we'll probably talk about a little bit, and is the subject of the documentary Dancing in the Water. He lives in Boulder, Colorado with his wife, Kristen, and their children, Charles and Amelia. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome to A New Direction, Matthew Mosley. Welcome.
All right, Jay. Thank you very much. What a pleasure to be here. I love what you're doing. You are such an inspiration and just we're coming to you live today from Boulder, Colorado.
That's awesome.
And let's talk about some great stories and strategies and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah. So the book is divided up. So because by the way, the book's available at Amazon bookstores near you. But the book is divided. You divide it up into three sections, and it's kind of a history, and then a kind of a how-to, and then a why. And which I want people to know, the historical aspect of this book is incredibly important, because I don't think we can know where we're going if we don't know where we've been. And I don't think we can understand the why if we don't understand how we got there in the first place. And one of the things that really jumped out to me in the very first section, and it was really in chapter one called Spark, you say, ultimately there is one criterion that drives all our choices. Do we care or not? This question informs how we interact with others and profoundly impacts how we make decisions, but ultimately affect us, our communication, doesn't it?
It sure does, because the general act of pretty much everything, whether you want somebody to pull the lever in a voting booth, whether you want them to buy your shampoo, whether you want them to tune into your podcast, is getting people to care about making a choice. And that all starts with educating, with communicating. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Jay, one of the things that I found out in writing this book, I spent 6 years interviewing tons of different people, like fighter pilots and astrophysicists and authors. And some of the research I came across was from, are you crying again?
Yeah, I'm weeping. I'm weeping. People, if you can't see me, I've got a cut cornea, and so the lights are coming at me, and it's refracting, and all of a sudden I'm leaking, and he's already got me.
I hope all your viewers know it's because of the content that he's using. That's why he's really crying. It has nothing to do with a cornea.
Okay? It has nothing to do with it. You're right. Okay.
Some of the research I came across, Jay, which was fascinating, was that paleontologists have discovered that, look, there were many other sapiens running around out there, Neanderthals being one of them, who were much stronger than us. But we were able to drop our larynx to communicate. Grunts and groans became collaboration. And because we could collaborate for a greater good, because we could bring our tribe together for a common purpose, that was our secret sauce. And people wonder why humans are why we are today, why we have dominion on this planet. It's because of this one special element that we possess that nobody else does, and that's communication and our ability to create meaning. And you talked about it in the spiritual element. Yeah, we may not be spiritual, but we're all looking for meaning. Mm. We're all looking for meaning in our life.
Right. Yeah, it's really true. And I want to piggyback off this because in that second chapter, you really make a huge point about empathy. And you say, to create more power, develop relationship. Empathy is an easy concept to understand theoretically, but it is much harder to practice in this world. And true empathy helps us better understand the audience we need that they, in their need for a product or a production or a ballot measure or a campaign or elected office. Let's talk about that just real briefly about the power of empathy in carving out our message.
Absolutely. Because empathy in the way that I talk about it in the book, you know, it's a personal quality, but all the best organizational managers, the best leaders, the best CEOs that I've ever worked with have a special capacity to understand the interests around a table and who they're dealing with, right? And so that they're sort of very in tune with who those interests are and what they need to feel good about the situation, to trust you, right? To trust that you're doing the right thing. And so empathy, I find, is such an important element in leadership, in communication, because being good communicators in our world, in crisis management and crisis communications, it's not just about being transparent, but you also have to be trustworthy in that what you're saying, that people will accept it. And that comes from understanding what people need. And if you don't understand what people need, you can be the best engineer, you can be the best CEO in the world, but nobody's going to follow you. Nobody's going to understand what you need if you don't understand that. And so, look, we may talk about it a little bit later, but yeah. I want to point to, you know, part of empathy is really good listening. And I know you've talked about listening before on your show. Something I just heard recently from a friend of mine, Rosalind Wiseman, who wrote the book that became the cult classic Mean Girls, the movie that Tina Fey produced. She just wrote something. And we talked a lot about active listening, right? Listening to understand versus listening to just respond. Two very different things, you know. When you're in the hot seat, you're listening to respond. If you're listening to really comprehend, you're listening to understand. What she said was listening is being prepared to be changed by what you hear. And if you're not prepared to accept the conceptual underpinnings of what other people are saying, then why are you listening at all? That's why you listen to respond, right? That's why you're just listening to appease your own ego so that you're concocting your own next statement. You know, it's very debate-like, right? If you're in a political debate, you're sort of thinking one or two steps ahead. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I was a debate person myself and you want to be thinking about that way. But the real special sauce there, the special quality is listening to be prepared by what you, or to be changed by what you hear. I thought that was so powerful.
I do too. I think that is really, really powerful, because that means we have to be open, right?
Yeah.
We have to be totally open for us to be able to receive that message. We come in with so many judgments, don't we? I mean, speaking psychologically, right? We judge people in 300ths of a second or less right away. And we have to counter that bias immediately by reminding ourselves, well, and you talk about this too, we got to be aware.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to mention, you know, to kind of arc off that, if you will, if you don't mind,
go ahead.
There's a chapter that closes out sort of the part one of the book called Working the Room.
Right.
And, you know, I had this really fortunate experience. My first job out of college in Louisiana was working at a restaurant, Commander's Palace, you know, one of the great restaurants of all time. And Emeril Lagasse, cutting his teeth there, was the chef. That's where he developed BAM, which meant a lot of things, by the way.
Yes.
But, you know, there, Ella Brennan took me under her wing one night and she said, son, I'm going to teach you how to work a room. And the delicate dance that she did between each table, whether it was a senator, a local from down the street, a tourist from Oshkosh, you know, the governor, I mean, anybody, like the way that she could just talk and make them feel special and connect for just a second, you know, to make that human connection, not to be intrusive, right? But to have the interaction.
Right.
And it was so special. It was something that I've carried with me my whole life. And, you know, that's situational awareness. in a nutshell. That's what it means. And so I think, Jay, every person in America should have the responsibility of working in a restaurant or the military or a nursing home or, you know, what have you. Serve somebody and you will learn humility.
Yep.
You will learn about people. You're going to get a life lesson there.
I worked in restaurants going through college and grad school. I tell people all the time, you really don't understand service until you're not in the mood, but you understand that it doesn't matter what your mood is that day. You have to serve people and serve them well.
You do it. You're a professional.
Right. That's what you have to do. And you know, how many times did you have to put your life on hold to serve people? And it's so important. And I think this is also part of, you know, bringing it full circle is that, you know, in the communication business, it doesn't matter what I feel at that moment. It matters what they feel when I carve out that message.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's the piece of it. Matter of fact, you say in chapter 7, State of the World, Desperate as Usual, and I'm going to point this out. I'm going to point this out because this is really a great quote because it really does, this bridges it. When managing any fragile issue such as a pandemic, the most important element and guiding principle is to maintain trust. And I think when you talk about being at Commander's Palace, you know, what she taught you is how can you be trusted, right? Because people have to trust you. I mean, even though you may be the maitre d', and when you start working the room, right, there has to be a trust between you and that you develop between you and the people who are you're serving or, you know, checking in on. Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, Ella one time says, and there's a wonderful documentary called Commanding the Table about Ella Brennan and Commander's Palace. And she says in it that a restaurant is a metaphor for life. Oh, you're crying again, and I'm about to cry. A restaurant is a metaphor for life, and that's how you want to treat people when they come into your own home.
Right.
And
right. That's
how you make people care, right, Jay? Those are the seedlings of caring, is that kind of trust and that kind of empathy to bring it full circle, right?
Yeah.
And that this sort of listening for understanding the interest around you, you know, working with the utility company, you know, we have these meetings every week and we'll go in and there's somebody from regulatory affairs. There's somebody from government affairs from the Capitol. There's the legal team. There's the communications people. There's the CEO, you know, and there's people you don't even know what they do.
Right.
But so the CEO there is such a master at just sort of understanding like, okay, this is what communications need to be successful. Hey, regulatory knows this won't fly, but they need this. The legal, you know, it all sort of jives, and to really understand those parts, I think is a special skill that's intuitive, right? It's difficult to learn unless you've sort of been in the situations, and you know, we've all worked with kind of organizational leaders who, you know, they're looking out for their own butts, and they don't want to do anything that puts them in jeopardy, or risks anything, and they're close-lipped, and you know, we all leave these meetings sometimes. I'm sure you have too. It's like where you're like, so what are we doing? What's the course of action here? And you know, I can't stand that. And you know, you saw this chapter. I have a chapter on meetings, and I might be the only person in America. I love meetings. You know, I liked.
That's so sad. That is so sad, Matthew. I'm just going to tell you right now. That is so sad.
I should get myself checked. But, look, that's where things happen. That's where things are on the line. That's where you can, you know, you get deliverables and more work. And, you know, it's also a theater of improvisation. You know, there's a script, which is just an agenda, but that's all it is a few words on a page.
Right.
And so there's a lot of opportunity in this live theater to advance, right? I mean, I think these are the times when people can really shine or look like a complete ass too, conversely.
Right.
When they're not paying attention and they're on their phones, on their laptops, not paying attention. Right. That drives me crazy.
Yeah. By the way, we're talking with Matthew Mosley. The book is called Ignition, Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections. Available bookstores everywhere. We're talking about this, and one of the things when it comes to communication and the marketing, carving out a message, And I'm really glad that you brought it up in the book in chapter 9 called Decision Making was the OODA loop. And we've had Rob Schallenberger, who is an F-16 fighter pilot, on here, and he talked about it. We've also had a Blue Angel, I'm trying to remember, this is a few years ago, that was on here, and they talked about the OODA loop and how important that is for us when we're trying to carve out a message of observing, orienting, deciding, and then acting. And we're kind of dancing around that, actually, and what you're saying right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned you've had two other fighter pilots when, I think it's like chapter 8 or 9, but it's called Buddha and the Fighter Pilot, yeah, and Mark yeah. Williams. And he turned me on to the OODA loop. And so Mark has been a great friend for over a dozen years and been one of my paddlers for adventure swimming and on some of my really big swims. And I tell you, there's no person that you'd rather have is in a kayak next to you for 17 hours than a former fighter pilot who knows how to stay in formation the entire time, right? And will not break that come hell or high water, even if he's puking over the side of the kayak and I don't see it.
Right.
So Mark turned me onto the OODA loop, and it was fascinating. And this is what I did with Ignition. I wanted to talk to a bunch of different people in different fields about these universal principles of communication that are applicable on any profession, anywhere, right?
Right.
So Mark talked about the OODA loop where you don't get into a plane. This was pretty fascinating. You don't learn to fly until you've learned how to talk about flying, right? It takes about a year to learn all of the commands and the special language of being in a plane. Because he's like, you don't get on the plane like, help, what's going on, everybody? There's very specific check, and you hear him like Blue Angel check. That means very specific things and how they fly in formation, when they change, who's in lead point, Yeah. And my friend Mark Williams, I always compare him. He's kind of like the Maverick, since you're coaching Mavericks. Right. Like he's like the real Maverick, Yeah. He's just such a badass. He talks about the OODA loop, and that when you can get inside somebody's OODA loop and sort of mess it up, that's sort of the hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
But also the way that I talk about it in the book is that, John Boyd, who came up with the irascible colonel, who has, just this legendary reputation that I found out, pretty heroic figure, but also very controversial in a lot of ways. But he talks about it in sort of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle in quantum physics and really goes very, very deep into that. It's not just a decision-making process, but it's a didactical evolutionary process of humanity, right? That it's really writ large. And I thought that was just fascinating in that, we observe, take in information, we orient ourselves. This is, we're evolving, then we're deciding,
right?
Okay, let's make the plan. This is what we're doing, people, and that's where my book kind of really plays. And then acting, let's go do it,
right?
Which is that's where I love in my career is like, all right, here's the action. We're doing the rally, we're doing the thing, we're doing the press conference. It's game on,
right?
I love that.
His name is Matthew L. Mosley. The book is Ignition, Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections. And you're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey, everyone, listen, I got two great sponsors, right? I talk about them all the time. Epic Physical Therapy is one of them. Listen, it doesn't matter if you're just an average Joe like me or you are a professional athlete. You know what? They work with them all. And here's the deal. They provide you with a customized treatment plan tailored to your individual needs. Right? It's because they understand that there is a need to treat the entire body as a functional whole, not just your symptoms or your injury. So when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, stop at epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You know why? She's been in the business for 35 years, and she started when interest rates were around 18%. Her very first client from 1985 still comes sees her today. That says something, doesn't it? It says that she's built trust. It says that she's earned that in a sense. And you know what? She's served thousands of people up to today. So why not? If you're ready to sell your home, buy your home, start with Linda Craft at Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Matthew L. Mosley and his book Ignition. And we're talking about communication strategies and building connections and carving out your message. And we've been talking a little bit about kind of, you know, setting the table for this. And we're going to jump into part two, the communications planning and implementation section. And chapter 11 is entitled, Where Are You Going? And you say in that chapter, the first step in writing a communications plan is to address intentions, goals, and objectives. Do we understand that well enough?
You know, I think people understand that they have a problem, but they don't have a framework sometimes for addressing that problem. Mm. And so that it sort of seems very intractable to them. So, you know, I get clients that want a communications plan that's going to be 120 pages. Sometimes it's a three-page document for a quick legislative bill or something. And sometimes it's just a guy, you know, Jay, you call me and say, hey, can we go have a beer? Right. I got this little issue and I want to figure out how I should really think about it and address it. And so it could be a back of the napkin, right? I like to say that I could make anyone a better communicator in 15 minutes. Mm. I could be the 15-minute communication plan man.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you
okay,
do that in 15
so let's
minutes?
Talk about that.
Okay.
So first of all, we want to have our goal. What are we trying to do? Right? Where, if we're point A, where does point B? Okay. Is it getting a date? Is it killing a bill? Is it getting elected to office? Is it stopping a massive public campaign against something? Or is it protecting water? What could it be? Right. Where do you want to go?
So let me ask you this. What if it's like, okay, my goal is I want to, because I got a lot of people in the sales and own business, I want to get more customers or clients.
Okay. Yeah. That's a perfectly valid goal. We want to sell something, right? Okay. We have a product. We want more awareness about something.
Okay.
So, but you want to have a clear goal because this is surprisingly harder than you think with organizations about, okay, you're bringing us on. You have a different opinion about something. This person has a different opinion. Let's get really clear on the end goal, right? So then I take people through three questions, Jay. Pretty simple, but it forms the whole basis of an Ignition communications template and a whole strategy. So the first question, what are we saying? What's your messaging? What's the crystallization of everything that you have thought of that is going to move people the most? What's your sort of call to action, if you will, right? What do you want people to do and how are you going to move them? This is where you know, how are you going to get people to care? Mm. What are those magic words? You know, I have a dream.
Right.
You know, there's words that can ripple across space and time. The second question is, who are you saying it to? What is your audience? Now, this can be surprisingly deep as well, because we like to use a lot of third-party validators where we say, you know, other people talking about Jay Izzo is much more powerful than Jay just talking
Absolutely.
About himself.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's a really powerful concept when you write it really large on a big scale. And then we have, you know, targeting the whole valley of Silicon Valley is based off of targeting. Those are all targeting companies. So we've come a long way in how we identify certain audiences. And look, I'm dealing with a client right now. Our only audience is one person, the governor. Now, to get to the governor, there are different ways of doing that. And there's lots of different strategies, but that's who we need to influence. So then you want to be really clear on who that person is, or the people that you need to, like you say, increase your product sales, right? Who are those people that are going to be the relevant candidates? And you know, that's a pretty common sales strategy, but I think it's not well executed.
Let me jump in here, because I think it goes back to what we said about empathy, right? I don't think I could create that sales strategy if I don't really understand what they, right? Exactly. I mean, I think I have to go back there, don't I, for step two?
And create avatars? Oh, yes. There's lots of different strategies for the targeting, and then, you know, to the messaging and the audience sort of build, you know, that's your sort of groundwork for the empathy and the trust level. Because then only when you have that can you go to step three, which is the third question. How are you going to say it? What are the tactics for you to get out there? Now, look, if you're asking somebody on a date, I usually don't recommend sending a text, right? Like if you want to tell somebody, you want to ask somebody to marry you, don't send a text or leave a voicemail. You know, find the right ways. And like now in our world, Jay, right, we have millions of ways we can communicate to people in different avenues. Find the right way that works for people. And look, I'm an old guy like that still goes, like, I think personal touch, I think old school retail sales is still your most powerful. You know, there's the digital space, which is, you know, that's a whole nother book and a whole nother podcast in itself. But, you know, the millions of ways that we can say things. Is it a press conference? Is it a, you know, is it a door knock? Is it a phone call? Like, figure that out and, you know, what's the best way of saying it. So then you put all of those together, add some evaluation, a few other things, and you've got a real strategy for a communications plan, right?
Right. Now, here's where it starts to, you know, as we start to break that down, right? If we start to break that down and that moves us to chapter 12, which is called Reason and Emotion and Stories. And, you know, you talk early on in that you say the brain is not a computer, which I'm so glad you said that, because we continually try to, even in my field of psychology, we continually try to make the two comparisons. They're just not. But you say something so powerful and so, I don't know, it's so powerful and so true. And I'm just going to quote you because it's so good, and then I want you to jump on it. For decades, economists and social scientists assumed that human behavior was predicated on reason. Economists had developed and adhered to a theory of rational choice, in which a person weighed all opportunities and challenges and made specific calculation of the utility of an option before making a decision. And you, of course, talk about Dr. Drew Weston, who wrote The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. By the way, that is just one of the most awesome, well-written paragraphs I've ever read.
Well, thank you. And I don't, you know, it's not groundbreaking, I don't think. And I believe, you know, as much, you know, you're in psychology, and I'm sure there is a movement in that field to reduce everything to data, you know, and to like, what are your findings and like, what's your data set?
It's
you're crying again. My God.
Well, I'm sad. I'm sad about that because I have a science degree. I'm watching it fall apart. Yeah.
It took Drew Weston, Dr. Weston, a neuroscientist, to tell us that we don't make decisions based on rational choice. And, you know, I went through graduate school in public policy, and that was sort of the dominant theory of the time. And I think it was coming to its sort of challenging close.
Right.
But for years, like, you know, that was just so accepted that we were just these rational beings.
Right.
And, you know, even I talk about it early in the book where, you know, the early Greek philosophers compared Aristotle that was like, look, our brain is a chariot of two horses of reason and emotion, and that our job is to try to keep them in check.
Right.
So that one horse doesn't drive us in the ditch. But the science even proves that we are emotional beings. We make choices. We buy products that don't serve our self-interest. We vote for candidates that are going to do things that do not promote our self-interest. You know, we are capable of throwing ourselves in front of the, you know, for love, and, you know, we'll do anything. And so it just proves itself over and over and over again. And look, as a, it's kind of a left-leaning person, I've seen, you know, progressive causes, and I've worked with associations and unions that just want to repeat facts and figures and like, oh yeah, if we just explain ourselves and explain, then people will get it. No. You got to create an archetype. You have to create a story. And we talk about some of that in part two, right? Some of the strategies for creating stories and sticking to a very disciplined message about what you are and what you believe. That's what people want. You referenced earlier, we call it the emotional journey. But, you know, when you're setting out on this communications planning and you want to go from point A to point B, what do you get people to think, to feel, and then to do?
Yeah.
You know, and it follows a very natural pattern, but most people in their communications, they just throw on the wall and see what sticks, right? And they don't really think about how it sort of resonates with the audiences.
Yep.
And so I think so that's, you know, talking about a 15-minute communications plan, man, that's sort of how we, you know, if I was going to have a beer with you sometime, and right. that's what I would take you out and we would talk about that.
So here's what I found. So, because I got to tell you something, and those three questions that every person who's in a business, I don't care what you do, needs to ask these three questions. Because you say, what do I want my audience to do? And I just want to remind people what he said. What do I want my audience to think? What do I want my audience to feel? And what do I want my audience to do? I mean, that has to be the fundamental three questions we ask whenever we're communicating. I mean, it doesn't matter if I'm communicating with my wife. I mean, right? I mean, what do I want her to think? What do I want her to feel? And what do I want her to do? Right. I mean, I know that sounds absurd in some level, but it really is that fundamental, isn't it?
It's very fundamental. And it also, you know, we're explaining it and talking about it. We're in a very bigger concept of pictures. And right. I use it to think about, you know, public education funding or water or big public policy things. But like you said, you know, getting a date, talking to your wife,
right.
You know, hey, I'm going out with my friends tonight. Well, let's think about how I'm going to do that. Do I tell her after I've already been out for 2 hours, you know,
right.
already with my friends at the bar, and I send her a text? She's not going to be happy about that.
Right.
I give her a shout. Hey, by the way, I'm going out with my friends. It's noon. We're talking. Oh, that'd be great. I'm sure you'll be happy to see them. Fine. You know, it's approach. It's how you approach things.
Right.
You know, are people angry? Are they sad? You know, one thing we didn't talk about that was in part one, just real quickly,
sure.
was – you know, I had either the good fortune or the bad fortune of working with the author Hunter S. Thompson.
Right.
You know, who's from the famous Gonzo author.
Yep.
And one night we literally blew up a bomb in his backyard and my heart was palpitating, you know, oh my God. So he asks me, he says, son, do you know the meaning of the word politics? Mm. And I'm like, I've been in politics for 15, 20 years. I could not answer this question. I'm like, voting? Governance, public policies are wrong. He's like, son, the meaning of the word politics is the art of controlling your environment. Mm. And those who control their environment the best win the day.
Right.
And that's in sales. That's in advertising. That's part politics. That's across every field in personal development.
Right.
And that, you know, rightly or wrongly, we can create the stories around us that define our environment. And we want to create the future we want to see. And if we're not doing it, then who is?
Right.
Right.
Right. Somebody's going to do it. Somebody's going to do it. This was the epiphany I got from it. Because, you know, I read, you know, Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew, I think he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, in his book Propaganda, and you know, he talked about, you know, manipulating and that it's going to be done by people you don't even know and et cetera, so forth. And it you know, it bothered me at first, you know, because I was reminded of it. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like the idea of manipulating. But then I'm thinking about it and I'm going, well, then if you don't control your message, if you don't control the message, if you're not the first one out there with the message, somebody else will be.
Well, exactly. And do you think, you know, I had the same sense when I was reading Edward Bernays. I was kind of like, oh, this is a little sinister at first.
Right, but then, right,
you know, you're like, ah.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I talk about his story of him, you know, one of his famous acts was getting 12 debutantes to smoke cigarettes in the Macy's Day Parade as torches of freedom, you know. But what he says, and which is so important, because they were dealing with elements of fascism and Nazism and the rise of all of that, was that in a democratic society, if you don't have that,
right,
you have nothing. And so it's a matter of we have a responsibility. And that's where he kind of falls down at the end of his career is like, hey, we have an ethical responsibility to be, to have integrity, to be honest with people, but we have a responsibility to tell our own stories.
Right.
And if we don't do it, then other people will. And without the right to tell our own stories, that's when we're in real trouble. That's fascism.
Right.
That's Nazism. So.
Yeah, I think what people have to understand here is that emotion is just so important when it comes to carving out our message. You know, because I think we still, so many of us want to rely on, well, people were going to think logically. If we just give them stats and figures and data, you know, that's going to convince them to either buy into what we want to do or sell or whatever it is. And it's just not how we're wired. And, you know, we know that we can get our amygdala hijacked. We've talked about that, you know, ad nauseum on the show about with other people that what happens is, you know, we get triggered and all of a sudden we've got biases. We want confirmation bias because we want people to agree with what we believe, or we want to go with people that believe or look like us, or we have illusory correlation, right? So we get this illusion that these two things are correlated and we treat it as fact or, you know, causation because we want to make this belief. And it just doesn't work.
It works too well. I think it works. You know, what we're saying now is like, you know, in some of these conspiracy theories and things that are being propagated, you're like, are you serious? Like you mentioned two unrelated facts then are somehow like, you know, sewn together. And you're like, wait, this has nothing to do. Hey, I wanted, you know, before you move on too, I think if you ever write a book, you could call it Amygdala Hijacked. I love that one. That's a great book title.
I would love
Hijacking the Amygdala.
I wish I could take credit for it, but I think it was Kahneman who actually called it the Amygdala Hijack.
Oh, it doesn't matter. You can hijack that too.
I'll put it to press first. How about that?
Mosley said you could do it.
I love that. One of the things you say, by the way, when it comes to carving a message, that really jumps out at me. Matter of fact, before we do that, let's do this. Folks, you are listening to the great Matthew L. Mosley. His book is Ignition, Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections. You're listening to him right here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, my two sponsors, Epic Physical Therapy, they are my physical therapist, right? But they're not only my physical therapist, they're the physical therapist of tons of people. And I have to be honest with you, I have been there when professional athletes have been in there. And I got to tell you, they have the most cutting edge, advanced top line equipment, things like the AlterG anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec sleeves, the Game Ready. They offer the most cutting edge treatments like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping. That's just a few. Look, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, don't look any further. Go to Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. She's carved out a name for herself over 35 years by serving people all over the world because, well, as her clients say, she's a legend of customer service. And how did she become that legend? Well, she created relationships and they trust her. So listen, start where trust begins. That's Linda Kraft at Team Realtors. So when you're ready for your sold sign, start there. And you can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Matthew Mosley, the book Ignition. It's outstanding, available bookstores near you. Are you having a good time, by the way?
I'm having a blast. I love doing this stuff. I say the only thing I like more than writing is talking about writing.
I'm enjoying it. Listen, I am enjoying our conversation, and I see that other people are doing as well. And I just love this book. I really do. And I say I love all these books because I read a book a week for the show, but this one really, really hit me in terms of my own business and, you know, as a coach, you know, and coaching executives and other professionals, but it really hit me in changing my message. And I need to think differently about getting my folks to think differently. And I really want to thank you for that because sometimes I don't see the connection, but I immediately saw the immediate connection for me personally. So I'm really grateful that you wrote this book, and I'm grateful that you're sharing that with the audience out here as well, because it really is outstanding. And I want to say something that you wrote here, because it's really critical that I think people understand it. You said the most effective communicators pick the best fitting words out of infinite combinations to most clearly express their thoughts and emotions on a particular subject to a particular audience. And I think we're not always very careful with our words. And we could be more concise, or we could be, I think Jerry Seinfeld said one time that it would take him, like, just for one small joke, it might take him weeks to come up to wordsmith the joke to make it work, right? Because he had to, you know, get it concise and smaller, and, you know, maybe he had to use words that had a different meaning, and how is that going to react to the audience? And I kept hearing him as he was talking about writing jokes. And I know that sounds silly in a way, but I was thinking about that in terms of this, what you're talking about, is that we need to be really, really cautious and careful about how we're writing our message too.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I deal a lot with crisis situations and crisis stuff. And I talk about it in the book where, you know, people just say a couple of wrong sentences and valuations of businesses crumble overnight. People's jobs are lost, careers ruined. It's insane, you know, and it's just like a few things, but what it does is it reveals underlying values. And that's where people then lose the trust of everyone around them. And so one of the, I have this sort of rubric where I say that the more you write, the less you get paid.
So, so,
you know,
that.
People that write like advertising jingles, yeah, or like, right, We Love to Fly and it shows, you know, millions of dollars. Like, I spend like months, 6 years on a book, and it's like pennies on the dollar.
Right.
But, you know, jokes, and, you know, to hear that Seinfeld does that is not surprising at all, because they have to pick very few words to sort of elucidate these big universal meanings, which then makes it funny, right? Because it's not just, it can't just be localized. It's got to be real sort of generalized, or, you know, sort of appealing to people to make it funny. So I think that's really important. And I mentioned, you know, I have a dream, but you think about certain phrases and words that have taken on meaning, and they ripple across time and space. And this is what I call a quantum communication, where it's not just the three words that were spoken, but it's the way that it moves people and then creates context for the future. 67 years ago, if you said, ask not what your country can do for you. You know, these are simple words that captured people and that live too. And so I encourage clients to, you know, we're not all going to write those speeches,
right?
But let's think about it in that importance and that gravitas of what it means and how people are taking it. And I, you know, I love speech writing. That's something that we do occasionally for people, and, you know, finding the metaphors that sort of connect, that are beyond the subject matter. You know, I think that's really important in storytelling, right? And how you connect people with issues, instead of just, hey, I'm going to spew some facts and figures at you. Let's tell you a story about it. And maybe we can relate it to some magical moment in history and connect it with that. So I think there's lots of great strategies.
Well, and let's talk about story, because you talk about the hero's journey, and awesome. All right. But I don't think people really understand how the hero cycle, as you point out, and you call it the hero cycle transformed, I don't think people understand how the hero's story, the hero's journey, if you will. And then you talk about Joseph Campbell, who's a literature professor who wrote The Hero with 1,000 Faces, based on the hero's journey. But that becomes a critical piece to forming our message, right? Because it's the story that is really important here.
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, I've had situations where a transportation engineer has come in and dumped six binders of process on your desk and say, okay, I need a 3-page, you know, story out of this. Like, what does this mean? And so I encourage clients to always sort of think about the hero cycle. And I know it's a little, I don't want to say trite, but you know, if you're in any literature class in college, you're probably going to study it. And you know, the whole town of Hollywood is based on the hero cycle.
Right.
And I don't think people understand that the same arc of a story is from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure to the Quran, you know, and like all of it, from Chaucer to Shakespeare, it's all follows the exact same trajectory.
It's the same story.
It's the same story over and over. But that's because we respond to it and we understand it and we live in it, you know. But what's really interesting, Jay, here is that when I'm talking to people, they always want to put their thing in as the hero in the hero cycle. Like, oh yes, okay, for this advertising commercial for a shampoo, let's put our shampoo as the hero. It's going to solve all the problems of the day.
No.
No. The consumer is the hero.
Exactly.
Because they've got to go to their meeting and feel like $1 million, and the shampoo is the helper.
Right.
That helps you along the hero's
right.
journey so that you go to the meeting and conquer the meeting and feel like $1 million. Candidates, political candidates famous for this who like, I am the hero.
Right. Here. Right. Right.
I am going to save the day.
No, no.
No, you are the helper. You're the ship that when the voter goes in the voting booth, that they think of you as helping them to sail safely across turbulent waters. You're not the hero.
It is so hard to get marketing people and executives and insert whoever here to understand that message. You don't have the cape. There is no S on your chest. You are one of the helpers.
Right. And that's how people will trust you, as to help them across. If they think like, oh, this guy, you know, this is all controlling, like, not so much, you know? And so I think that hero cycle is just, you know, and look, there are occasions to think
sure.
of yourself in a journey sure. of, you know, in your own life is like, okay, I'm going through these things. Who are my helpers? Who are the people I got to be wary of?
Right.
You know, what are my transformational moments of, you know, redemption and reflection and learning? And then when do I cross thresholds to new fields and to new horizons? That's perfectly acceptable. And, you know, something I know we're coming to the end of our time today here soon, and something we didn't really get into too much was, you know, this is my day job we've been talking about with right. Ignition, but in my early morning job is a open water adventure swimmer.
Right, right.
So
right.
I've done a lot of swimming around the world. I've got a couple of swims that nobody's ever done before. And, you know, when I wake up in the morning at 4:40 to go to a swim practice, and I kind of put myself in this hero's journey, and I write a little bit about it in the book, and, you know, that you do kind of come to this redemption with father figure,
right?
Which is kind of yourself.
Yes.
In the pool, it's like what you can do versus what you are doing, and what's the, you know, the deal there. But anyway, I go on about that. But you know, I think swimming, just as to wrap it up there about the open water adventure swimming, is that there's a lot of lessons I take from the water to life and to these client challenges. Which is, one of them is putting the right team around you to get you across,
right.
and to make sure that these things go across safely, and that, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Audacious goals and setting big dreams, you know, that things that people haven't done before, and thinking outside the realm of possibility in some of these things, and swimming across the Caribbean for 17 hours or right. across Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, you know, and then, you know, perseverance. And just preparation, you know, it's people just sometimes don't want to do the work anymore. Mm-hmm. I find, you know, it's like, you know, they're like, how are you an adventure swimmer? It's like, well, I get up at 4:40 in the morning and go swim my butt off in the early mornings. And, you know, it's cold, it's hard, but it makes me a better person.
Right.
It makes me smarter. It makes me think better. It frankly, Jay, if I didn't swim, I'd probably be crazy.
Right. You know? Right. Right. Now I get it.
So it's really important. And like, I have my own physical therapist too.
Right. No, I get it. Working out. I mean, we're pretty close to the same age. And so I get it. You know, those times I don't want to work out in the morning, I got to get done. Right. Yeah. You have to do it. And you know, you have, there was something in there in the hero's journey. You're talking about your swim. I think it was the 47 miles. Is that right?
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar? that you talked about 47 miles. And I was thinking about in terms of the hero journey, right? That, you know, you go out on this adventure, you meet these helpers along the way. And one of them is your friend, who's the F-16 fighter pilot on the canoe. And you got in this, and then you have to, there's a point in that swim where you're going, I really don't know that I really want to do this anymore. There's got to be that point. There's the obstacle, right? And then
absolutely.
And then becomes the mental issue in your head of solving that crisis or winning that contest over, so that you're, because I imagine with every swim you are transformed.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that question of why, you know, it's the Simon Sinek, you know, why are we doing this? And sometimes it becomes a little vague, but what helps me honestly is like when all of the swims I'm teaming up with an organization, you know, whether it's Plastics in the Caribbean, Water Quality in Lake Pontchartrain, or Drought in the West with American Rivers, you know, there's an organization that's put themselves on the line to believe in me and this swim. And they're either raising money, awareness, and they've got things going on. And there's people that have taken off work for a week to be there. And, you know, it means a lot to me. And so I feel like I have a duty, a responsibility to keep going. And like, you know, in Lake Pontchartrain, we had stuff from a Mardi Gras float, shooting lasers in the sky. I had Burning Man friends. It was just, as somebody said, they're like, you've made such a circus around you, you have to finish.
Like, that's awesome. we've been on an hour. It has gone so fast. There's so much I want to talk to you about, and we didn't get to. I hope that sometime maybe we can get together and do a part two. I would love to do that with you. How can people get a hold of you and get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You know, we are out and about doing speaking and training, and we work with a bunch of clients on lots of challenging issues. So we can be reached at theignitionstrategygroup.com. I'm also on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and all of those places. So give us a ring. We'd love to come and talk with you about any challenges you might face.
And that means internationally, folks, because I know I got a huge international audience. So wherever you're at internationally, he's willing to get there.
Absolutely. And I will mention, I will be in Tel Aviv for a book event and a swim on the Sea of Galilee in April.
Very
cool. So that's
cool.
in middle of April. Yep.
Israel is one of my biggest listening audiences.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's one of my biggest listening audiences.
Well, maybe we'll have to do something. It's going to be like April 13th or 15th. We're still getting the dates, but I'll let you know.
All right. That sounds awesome. Folks, his name is Matthew L. Mosley. The book is called Ignition, Superior Communication Strategies for Creating Stronger Connections. Wasn't he great? I told you he would be, right? I told you it was going to be powerful. Folks, here's the show, right? I tell you every week, right? You are in control of two things, regardless of what's going around you, right? Your attitude and your effort. Take control of them. You can. It's not always easy, but you can do that. I'm going to be back next week with another great show, another great guest. It's going to be another great book. And as I say to all of you every week, everywhere, and you know what that is, right? Ciao, everybody.
You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry. A new direction, a brand new
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.